Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. And with all the action going on in the metals, or maybe the lack thereof, I had to reach out to my number one expert, my friend, Mr. Anthem Blanchard from AnthemVault.com. And founder or author, or whatever the proper word is, of the Hayek. What do you say, Anthem?
I'm doing great, Todd. Thank you, Bubba. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
So what's going on? I haven't heard from you. I haven't seen you. I know a lot of big things. I read your name everywhere. So give us a quick recap of what's happening with you and your space and what you're doing, because I hear a lot of good reports. So tell us about it.
We appreciate that. It's an awesome team, first of all. So I was just the one who got lucky enough with really cool parents with the cool name. So the Hayek development has been awesome. The team has been doing a great job with it. So very excited. It's a gold collateralized Bitcoin. So it's a digital gold currency that is able to be paid anywhere in the globe. And so it's very, very powerful. It's super exciting. People are really, really jumping into it. And it's been a lot of fun. So we've been just really busy on the tech development side of things.
So has the price of gold or the lack of gold had anything negative or positive to the coin?
I don't really think so much, because I really think that most of this reaction in the gold price is really has to do with the margin calls going off in China more than anything. I mean, the Shanghai index, and you look at the Chinese indexes, and you just see these very, very precipitous falls. And I mean, there's real clear correlation there. I mean, I think the bigger story, frankly, is how well gold prices actually held up in the face of, you know, huge margin calls in a country that where the populace is the biggest purchasers of gold in the world, in China. So I actually think it's pretty impressive at how well gold held up, especially in lieu of the other commodity complex, energy, obviously, copper, the other commodities, the industrial commodities, really, really getting hammered. Obviously, been a theme for the last year. And so that's what I kind of find interesting. It seems like the narrative is getting pushed on gold, but it seems more like the narrative has really been dollar strength, so and general commodity weakness. So it's interesting, definitely interesting.
Is China the biggest, or is India the biggest in gold?
China is currently the biggest. So I mean, India is getting back up there. It used to be the biggest, and then there were so many tariffs that were put in India, it fell off, and it hasn't quite come back. That, I think, coupled with the big China boom and retained earnings, some of that getting put back into gold. So, it is China right now from a populist standpoint, but they're both huge. So, I mean, together, China, India, you're looking at right there about 70% of the world's gold market. So it's substantial.
Yeah, and so when you look now, and I was reading an article about you, how China plans to dominate pricing in the gold market.
Yeah, and I think it's just inevitable. I mean, it's just, where is the market at, right? I mean, the market's in China, so, and yeah, that they really understand, you know, the gold is money, and I think that what we're going to start seeing happen, I predict, is that with increased volatility in the foreign currency markets, the national currency markets, and, you know, seeing tremendous, you know, volatility in some of the systemic issues, and we saw a little taste of that with Greece, with some currency controls. I mean, we've seen the hyperinflation side of things getting out of control recently in Venezuela. So I think you're going to see gold become more prominent just in general, not just China, not just India, not just Asia, but globally have a renaissance again. And so it would be nice to have a gold and silver backed dollar. And it was really, it wasn't even that it was backed, you know, so to speak. It was just that it was defined. And so, because money was private at that point, it was really just defined in terms of what each U.S. specific state could even coin if they wanted to. Because the idea was that, you know, basically you'd have free, you know, private circulating coinage, and you know that's the tradition of the United States of America, and that's the truth. And you know that has worked very well. There were impediments because of issues from a technology standpoint of clearing and being able to make change. It's just difficult with coinage, and it can be expensive if you lose it. So you know, now with technology, we've completely circumvented all of those issues and then improved upon the biggest issue of all, and really corruption. And you know the ability to have that, all this information to be incorruptible and have that to be publicly verified, that's what the Bitcoin technology, that's part of the magic of what that innovation unlocks. So you can't have an Enron, you can't have, you know, a situation where a financial institution is changing the numbers in a database, because the database can be verified whether it's been changed or not by the public. So It's pretty huge. It's exciting time.
I mean, very exciting time. So, and you mentioned that, you know, that it used to be coins, right? You used to have a silver certificate, which is what used to say on the top of what your dollar bill. You get a Morgan silver dollar, right? You could take your paper dollar in for a Morgan silver dollar.
I believe so. So you did have convertibility there with the gold and silver certificate. So. And you could take them down and you could actually get two treasury, and you could get metal in return. So even from a note standpoint, from the government standpoint, I mean there's a tradition, but you know, the issue there I think is, I mean, any hope for the government I think to return to any kind of gold standard that anyone could reliably trust on at this point in time I think would be impossible. There's just too much information now. I mean, this has been happening all throughout history. People have known about it, but you didn't have the broad level of education and literacy that you have these days. So, I mean, just communication is so cheap and globally. So you just can't pull the wool over people's eyes, I think, like you ever used to always be able to in history. Governments always did in history. So you can't do that anymore. You know, people, I think now they have the will. We have the will of people through education, through shows like yours, you know, obviously Dr. Paul. We got another Dr. Paul now doing a great job as well, I think, with educating people about natural rights and the importance of protecting them, and you know, having institutions that protect them. And arguably, I think very, very strong, arguably, but money is property, and property is a very important right, natural right, a property right to protect. So ownership, and you know, ultimately, you know, having money be in the hands of government means that it's owned by the government, and being able to have something that did not have conjured value from government decree, as fiat does, you know, makes it really a freer piece of money and a property, and ultimately more valuable. That's why it holds its value over time, I think, because one of the main reasons, because it can't be fabricated, it can't just be changed in terms of its value by government decree.
So in other words, just to make sure we understand what you're saying, My paper dollar, which is actually a note, you know, instead of a silver certificate, which I could trade, and now it's just really a loan, or it's money from the government. But my paper money can be changed at the whim of the Fed if they want to devalue, right? And my real gold is only circulated based on, you know, what happens in other world currencies. Would that be correct?
Absolutely, Bubba. You got it. That's it.
So we have to be careful, which is the problem with the fiat currency. I mean, again, there's a lot of schools of economics out there. There's the two basics are, would you say, Keynesian and Austrian, right, or Western
and monetarist, you know, right? So kind of like the Keynesian monetarist, I kind of put a little bit similar, you know, because ultimately they both believe in a central bank. And you know, really, then you have the Austrians who don't believe in a central bank. But definitely of the two, monetarists and Keynesianists are a lot more extreme. Because
hold that thought, Anthem.
Everything should be government.
We're going to pick this up when we come back to a break, because I want to get your thoughts on this. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. I'm with my friend, my man, and one of the smartest guys I know, also very heavily involved in the cryptocurrency space, but starting with gold and others. But Anthem Blanchard from AnthemVault.com. You got to check it out. And he does a lot of great stuff, so make sure you check out his site. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. We're going to step out here for a break, and we'll be right back to The Bubba Show with more from Anthem. Look around. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with my friend Anthem Blanchard from AnthemVault.com and pretty much of a metals expert. It's a and now the crypto expert as well. It's in his genes. It goes back to his dad actually. But so Anthem, you know, we were talking about the different types of economy. So go through your views, okay? Because obviously there's flaws and there's good in both. I know what I think the flaws are. I'd like to hear you go through Keynesian and what you don't like, and then through Western and what you do like, and then let's compare the two. But I'd like to hear your views because obviously they're similar to mine, but maybe a tad different. So let's hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I mean, in a nutshell, Keynesians believe that we should have a central bank, and namely because you need to have a central bank in order for there to be lots of government spending, because government needs a way to create its own currency that it can spend. And so, you know, that's basically the notion is all built on the idea that government would knows best, and a centralized group of individuals knows best what to do for the rest of the collective, basically, or the rest of the society. So that in my opinion is Keynesianism in a nutshell. And then on the opposite side you have the Austrian school, and on the Austrian side they say, well, you know, best not to have any central bank, because if you do have a central bank, it's always known that governments are going to keep spending and go out of control, and that irrespective of any kind of independence that's ever stated, invariably there's always political pressure that a government will put on a central bank in order to create policies that are beneficial to that administration. So, or at least make the administration look good, help create jobs. You know, that's the name of the game. So to keep elected and to keep stature. So, you know, that's, I think, in a nutshell, the two different schools of thought. So, you know, Austrians believe that individuals and the freest markets as possible, those will ultimately have the best, most rational price setting, and people will be able to afford more, and they'll have a better quality of living, standard of living. It fosters innovation and all of these things in order to keep prices up and margins up, and it's a very good thing. And, you know, people that are Keynesianists think that, well, you know, we don't need any of that innovation stuff because the government will just come in and they'll just figure it out. And we just need to have some central bank that can create a lot of money and currency, whatever, that we can buy stuff with, the government can buy stuff with, to make it better and to hand it out as it wants to different people. Kind of in a nutshell, I think, how to describe Keynesianism. So hopefully that kind of helps to really, really simplify it. But in a nutshell, I think it's pretty much it.
Now, one group believes on the supply model, and one group works off the demand model. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, in essence, where you have on the Keynesian side, right, where they believe that the more you consume, you know, the more you buy through some magical way to buy it. Who knows where you get it from? But you just keep buying. Eventually, one day, you know, maybe you have to pay something for all that you bought. But you know, think about that later. That's kind of the mentality of the Keynesianists. While with the Austrians, it's all savings. So, you know, savings. With more savings, then you can build more things. You can build better things. You can make things better. You can make things more efficient. You know, you can make things more affordable for people to buy. You know, you can then sell more. Those people can buy more, and then you can make more things that people can then enjoy. And that's basically the Austrian, the savings mentality model, I think, in a nutshell.
Right, and so for as far as deflation, Austrians believe deflation is good, and Keynesians believe deflation is bad. Correct.
Right. So can you kind of just depend, I think, on, in terms of you're talking about like a what I would call a more modern definition of inflation, of a price deflation. So like, you know, if prices go down, it's price deflation. If prices go up, it's price inflation. So right, exactly. Well, because Austrians believe that the money supply should basically, you know, be in equilibrium with the market and not have a central bank that basically dictates what the money supply should be. And so, yeah, therefore, in that standpoint, because you're not going to have some outside force of the government, at least, you know, going in there, interjecting more money into the supply, that all of a sudden, you know, things are not going to get more expensive. So because of the technology and innovation, things should get cheaper over time, right? It gets easier for us to do things. So technology makes it easier. So things should get cheaper over time. It shouldn't get more expensive.
So let's tie this now to a non, you know, a to what where we are now, right? We've got the Hayek, we've got Bitcoin. That was the first big popular electronic or cryptocurrency, right?
Yeah, it's cryptocurrency, you know, ledger, decentralized ledger, cryptocurrency, a way to keep track of things, way to move things around that no one else can screw around with and is done really cheaply.
Okay, now, in your mind, before I get your positives, because listen, I know you like it, and I don't disagree. I've never thought that it wasn't a good product. I have some concerns, which we'll talk about, but it's got no Fed intervention, right? It's strictly, you know, a Udemy purchase with nobody involving, and it trades out of the market. Now, when we look at the market, okay, what do you make of it, and why are you so confident that it can't be somewhat manipulated?
One of the reasons that I think makes it difficult to manipulate it is just because of, you know, whose hands it's in. And so, you know, one of the issues that people will bring up with the gold market, for example, is that the COMEX and the leverage markets are the price discovery mechanisms right now for the metals markets. And, you know, for the foreseeable future right now, at least, you know, this is obviously a big asterisk there that you can talk to a lot more than I can intelligently, but, you know, that's one of those things. So I think that, you know, really, really, you know, I think I lost my train of thought.
That's all right. And so, let me help you out with where I'm going with it. And it's all cool.
Yeah.
So here's my point. Look, I have no problem. Here's one thing I learned in my year. So I've been doing this I've been trading for 36 years. Okay. Yep. I've been trading. And the one thing I learned in the 36 years is that no matter what I trade, it doesn't really matter, but it has to be in a market that, number one, is liquid, okay, that I can trade in, and number two, it has to be backed by somebody, okay, not somebody, a person, but some exchange. For example, I trade at I'm a member of now the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, so I know if I put $1 million in cash in the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and I make a trade, okay, and I make $10 million, I know I'm getting paid. I know the money is guaranteed and backed by them, okay? And that's their charter and that's their deal. And I know that I'm never going to have to worry about getting paid. Whereas if I go into an illiquid market, or if I go into a market like, let's use the Forex market, okay? Forex, some houses have a backing, but most are the Wild West. Or even more prevalent today, binary options, okay? Binary options that through Europe are not exchange backed. So you are playing in the Wild West. So I could blow myself out. I could make a gazillion dollars, but there's no guarantee that I'll ever get paid the money. So when I always look at things is I say, well, I need to have an exchange that's backed. Now, again, I'm going to talk more about this when we come back, but I mean, I get the fiat currency deal, you know, because I'm always on the fence, right, with this whole subject, because I've got, you know, little birdies whispering in both sides of my head, and, you know, I'm not an economist myself, so I don't really know the right answer. But I do know one thing, that when you trade, for example, on the pink sheets, if you remember the movie The Wolf of Wall Street, when there's no liquidity and there's no market, those markets are easily manipulated by stronger hands, as we saw even in a regulated market, as we saw by the Hunt brothers when they manipulated the price of silver. But you see, what happened there is that the exchange said, the exchange offered the Hunt brothers an out. They said, look, we will give you X amount of dollars for you to go away because you're tying up the exchange. You're trying to corner the silver market and you are just locking the doors. But the problem is that you have no exit. If you do not allow the free flow of silver again, you're going to be out of business. And the Hunt brothers basically said, well, go screw yourself. We don't care. We're going to take our chances. Okay. And of course, what did the Chicago Board of Trade do? They said, okay, liquidation only. Well, everybody knew they could only sell. So the markets broke down because they would not provide liquidity. They tried to manipulate the market which can be done. So we're going to talk more about this. I'm sorry, I rambled on a little bit.
That was great. That was great. No, I appreciate you helping to cover me there, Bubba. That was excellent. Thank you.
So, but I want to talk more about this because this is my concern. I'm going to, you know me, I'm pretty transparent when it comes to my opinion. I don't hold back on what I think. But this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm with my friend Anthem Blanchard from AnthemVault.com. You got to look him up, and you got to check his website out. And he developed the Hayek, which is a great new product. He's got cryptocurrencies. He is the expert. He is the guy that I go to when I want to talk about this stuff because he is a known expert, not just my expert. But he's a known expert. So check him out, Anthem at AnthemVault.com. Anthem, this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show.
You're so delicious. You're so.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic process.
The War State by Michael Swanson is a must-read for anyone interested in the critical 20 years after World War II, when the United States morphed from a constitutional republic to a global imperial superpower. Get The War State by Michael Swanson from Amazon.com today.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Anthem Blanchard from AnthemVault.com. The Hayek, the cryptocurrency, the gold, the world, he understands. So I went through my definition of why I'm concerned. So, you know we've had problem with Bitcoin with Mt. Gox. Now, again, that's been explained, but there was a problem. We know the I never can get to remember the twins' names, but they're a little squirrely as well. What's the twins? Who's the twins?
Winklevoss.
Winklevoss. They're a little squirrely. My concern is this, Anthem. If I want to get involved in Bitcoin, because I have employees now that want to be paid in Bitcoin, and I have no problem with it. In fact, to me, I'm a smart enough guy. I don't mind it because I can buy on the bid somewhere, and I can pay them on the offer. So I'm going to make the spread, so they're going to get paid less. Okay. Right. Well, is that not true? There's a market.
It could be. Well, I definitely don't want to comment on the employment agreements, but it's pretty easy. But just like you exactly described it. So you go out, find an exchange. There's plenty of them out there, and you buy Bitcoin, and then you can pay someone, and it's great. It's actually, the really great thing is for them, because you just need to have internet access basically to sign up to have a wallet. So it's free, it's anonymous, it's not a ton of time and a lot of tabs and clicking and personal information that you have to give up. Now, you're going to have to do some of that when you buy it, and that's because of the regulations that are in place and the U.S. Treasury, and they're global. But, you know, that's, you know, to be expected. It's still so much easier than a traditional bank account or brokerage account to open up. So, you know, it's just a huge time advantage.
So how do I know that the Bitcoin that I'm storing today or whatever, you know, again, it's obvious all new. And besides, you know, I'm an old man, so it's different for me because I like to touch it and feel it. But how do I know it's going to be there? How do I know that guys like the Winklevoss guys? How do I know the Mt. Gox thing isn't going to happen again? How do I know that this whole thing isn't going to come crumbling down and I'm going to end up with an empty wallet?
It's a good question. So the empty wallet, you have to trust whoever, you know, wherever it is it's being held. Now, the other neat thing is you can actually hold it in a way where it's trustless. So you don't actually have to hold a central party. And it's something called cold storage. So it's basically, you know, you don't even have to trust some company. So then the question becomes, Well, if you have it in that cold storage form, well, then how can you trust Bitcoin blockchain from not changing? You know, what makes it immutable, in other words? And really there what happens is that the blockchain is mirrored on thousands and thousands of different computers and machines and databases all over the world, and that because of that, it locks steps in place, and the incentive structure in place is literally the Bitcoin itself. Because Bitcoin itself gives value, it serves like a token in an amusement park, so to speak, to be able to enjoy the different rides in the amusement park. And so the Bitcoin, in turn, allows people to enjoy the ledger, enjoy the utility in Bitcoin. So, you know, that's what gives it value. So, and if it were ever to become disrupted, then there are many, many other iterations of Bitcoin now, and the cryptocurrency, blockchain, you know, these are terms that are starting to become just ubiquitous in general. So, you know, there's constant innovation out there on this cryptocurrency technology. There's plenty of substitutes already. So, you know, we're just scratching the surface here.
100%. Again, obviously it's intrigued because now a lot of companies take Bitcoin as pay, right? You know, I think I know that Overstock takes it. There's many others. I think Priceline takes it. Now, Do companies I don't know if you know the answer to this, but do companies like that, do they hold the Bitcoin in their own wallet, or do they immediately convert it back into the fiat currency of dollars?
I think most of them convert it, is my understanding. I mean, but I can't speak to that. I mean, I think one of the issues that you have is, well, A, this, from volume standpoint, you're really, really low volumes, but then also in turn for bigger companies, there's no way to hedge it effectively, the price risk, even if you did hold a stockpile of them. So, you know, it just causes some practical problems with just, you know, standard operating procedures of the treasury side of a business. So, I mean, I think think it's going to take a while longer before you get enough liquidity, to your point earlier, and to actually be able to, you know, really see the kind of ubiquity that you would need, that you see with like something like gold already, right, where billions of people already hold it.
Right.
So it's definitely a long tail. So it's taken thousands of years to get to that point. So, you know, but obviously the digital age, that maybe things happen a lot faster now. So
that's cool. I mean, I get that part. Okay, so you said something very interesting, and this is, again, one of the things that I look at from my standpoint. There's no way to hedge it right now. So if I invest, if I convert all of my money over to Bitcoin, okay, and all of a sudden Bitcoin, and I'm not saying they get ripped off or they get stolen or anything, but all of a sudden Bitcoin goes from whatever today's value is. What was today's value? Do you remember? Or do you know?
Good question. It's probably hovering around 300, I think about 290 roughly.
So if Bitcoin goes from 290 to back to $13, okay, then what happens to me?
Yeah, well, then you definitely lost a lot of money in dollar terms, for sure. So, your purchasing power probably went down quite a bit, because I'm guessing the dollar can go up somehow commensurately. So,
do you see a hedging vehicle on the horizon somewhere where you can't actually hedge the Bitcoin? Because, you know, now
there's been talk. Oh, sorry about that. There's been talks of it, but it gets a liquidity issue, though. That's the problem. So, because even with a hedging product out there, it's going to be really expensive, you know, until you have enough liquidity in the underlying asset, right? That, you know, so that's what I see the issue being right now. But, I mean, maybe we are getting pretty close. I mean, you know, there's enough, you know, it's $40, $50 million of volume a day globally. I don't know. You tell me. On average, do you think that's enough?
Well, I mean, it's a good start. And I know that, of course, you know, like I said, there are some major corporations that take it as payment, and they're not so smart, because those are the same ones that are whining about the dollar, and they, you know, when they didn't make their earnings, they whined at the dollar. And I said, well, why don't you just hedge the dollar? That's an easy hedge, right? But but I'm assuming that if you buy from a Priceline or you buy from an Overstock, I have to assume that they're smart enough that they're going to hit you pretty hard on the exchange, and they're not going to give you the full value that you might be able to get on the street for it by itself if you pay cash. Because I think they have to leave enough room, because they're, in my opinion, and I have no knowledge of this, but in my opinion, the minute they take it in, they convert it right away.
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, I think right now it's really more of just a marketing ploy, frankly. I mean, it's just not tons of volume, but you know what? It's I think becoming now something a little bit, you know, it's an innovation thing now too, where they're realizing, companies are realizing how huge the cost advantages are, and they're just having to basically reconcile with the fact that, you know, they need to adopt this technology in some way, shape, or form. I mean, it's just, it is the future, and, you know, ultimately, you know, that's what has to be embraced. So in order to be able to get the new demographics into the store, in order to be able to, you know, continue to innovate, and as a company, it's innovation or die. I mean, but if you look back in history, I mean, all these huge companies that everyone thought were invincible, and, you know, they've now been in, you know, the dustbin, right? So, you know, Dow members, S&P members, so, you know, it happens. So I think that's why you're seeing all these companies innovate. They're realizing it's the way of the future, this decentralized clearing.
So what does the Hayek do now? Talk to me about the Hayek.
Yeah, so the Hayek is a digital gold currency, and it's a gold collateralized Bitcoin. So it allows you to take gold that's stored with us at Anthem Vault and your account at Anthem Vault. And so we provide you with the best insurance storage around, and then you can use that gold as a form of payment. So through the years and decades, there's been a plethora of many, many laws on the books in the U.S. Alone, just dealing with transmission of money. A lot of these stem from a lot of the traditional money service businesses, like Western Union, for example, namely, and a lot of the major banks, where there were a lot of impediments in place for companies that wanted to clear transactions and payments, and lots of licensing and government regulation. There's over like 90 different licenses and forms you have to get in all 50 states and the U.S. government alone. So it's very, very onerous. So one of the neat things about cryptocurrency is it is a peer-to-peer transaction. So because there's no central clearing, no company or entity itself is actually like transmitting a payment on behalf of one person to another, like a bank does, right? Like with your credit card, for example, right? There are banks or banks, a bank or banks, they're transmitting the payment. So the nice thing about cryptocurrency, it's actually treated like cash. Unbelievably, right? But that's actually how it works under the hood. Nobody has to see it, just like nobody has to see how the internet works or email works to use it. But logistically, like, that's what's going on under the hood. So that actually makes for tremendous amounts of innovation, because we're talking about government regulations. You and I both know very, very well how stifling innovations and licensing and all these impediments to business and innovation can be. And so because the federal government has come out and recognized that these are not centrally cleared payments, it's actually now taken away basically decades, I mean, 50 years, I would say, of, you know, regulations that have been piled on, making it really difficult for new innovative ways to clear. And it's really what's put us, in my opinion, in the situation we're in right now, where we have central banks that are having to bail out trillions of dollars, that are having to keep interest rates artificially low for years, almost a decade now. And that's the reason we got into the situation that we're in, is because of all this lack of innovation and money. And, you know, but what's beautiful, I mean, finally, you know, better late than never, right? The Treasury's come out
hold
3 years and said, hey, let's innovate. This is a hell of a problem. America is the heart of innovation. Let's innovate.
Hold that thought. We're going to talk about the innovation when we come back. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. I'm with my friend, my man, Anthem Blanchard from AnthemVault.com and the proud... owner, inventor of the Hayek. Really an innovative guy and been all over the news, so check him out. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll be right back after the break.
10 miles after 10,000 beers in 28 years.
Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with my friend Anthem Blanchard from AnthemVault.com. You got to check it out. You can actually open up like almost like a bank account with gold and trade slivers of gold through him. But, Anthem, you're talking about some innovations. Let's hear a little bit more about the innovation that you were talking about as we went to break.
Yeah, our team has created this Hayek, and it's a digital gold currency that allows you to pay anyone in the world. And the beautiful thing is even if it's in a country where you're not sure, you know, what are the sanctions, or is there some issue with them receiving currency because you're in the U.S. or in some Western country and they're not, and you have to get some money somehow. So, you know, that's the beautiful thing. It's completely blind to borders. So as long as you have internet access, you can create a Bitcoin, or in fact, even a Hayek account. So, you know, that's one of the beautiful things. You can hold it anywhere. And so it's an incredible breakthrough, right? Because you can imagine someone in the developing world, they're not by infrastructure, it's really expensive, even like a $10 or $20 minimum fee to some people. I mean, that could be in some places, you know, a couple works, you know, of pay. I mean, it's all relative. So, you know, by killing the regulatory costs from the account opening standpoint and minimizing the regulatory costs in terms of the exchange standpoint, it ultimately offers tremendous barrier of entry to the world. So that's what's exciting to me.
And I'm all for it because, listen, I'm not a fan of the Federal Reserve. I think they did a brutal job at this. I mean, Ben Bernanke, Janet Yellen, to me, are they're not dumb people because they're very intelligent from a books part, but none of them have an idea how to run a business. And of course, the United States should be or is the biggest corporation in the world, I believe, in my opinion. And it is a business, and we don't run it like one. We run it, we let the banks run up all that debt. We let the banks go bust, and then, oh, well, we got to bail out the banks. And because of the banks, what they're really done is they've wiped out the middle class. They've kept the middle class in a recession. The entire time the stock market has been prospering, the middle class has still been in recession and wondering what they're going to do next. And, of course, the jobs stink. So my job, I give the Fed an F-, and they're more of a drug supplier to the banks, allowing the banks to kind of rule the roost. And, you know, oh, we're going to keep loaning out money, that Tier 1 capital. We're going to keep loaning it. We don't care who we give it to. And if we go broke, we got the Fed behind us. So I know that you don't believe in the central bank, but I also know that you said that we probably could not do without one somewhere, although I know that you wish we didn't have one. But what's your thoughts on the Fed?
My thoughts are similar in the stance that I think that, yeah, they are there to help protect the existing system. And so it's, I mean, that is their mandate, you know, more than anything, I think. And so, you know, ultimately, when you really boil it down, so it's a difficult position to be in, because at the end of the day, you know, in any government-created fiat system, it's literally impossible to ever pay down debt created with interest on top of it without creating more currency. So, like, when you actually boil down the math problem, that's what it comes down to. So, you know, you're talking about a rock and a hard place. So that's why it's always a little difficult for me to really evaluate the Fed, quite frankly, because it's really kind of a case of, well, if the goal is to keep the wheels on for as long as possible and to try to have the ride be as smooth as possible, then, yeah, I think you'd have to say, well, they failed in that standpoint, because you've seen more and more and more oscillation and ultimately higher peaks and lower troughs when you look at stock market peaks and crashes, for example, and we saw it in real estate, and it's more and more and more pronounced. And so, but again, at the same time, I'm also savvy enough to know that that's not necessarily any particular policymaker standpoint. That's just happenstance for the way that the whole system plays out over decades and decades. And now Centennial is, what, 2 years ago? So 102 years in now. So, you know, you're just looking at the very end of an unwinding. So I actually think that it's good that we have some, you know, we have stability. At the same time, I think that the extreme danger is that if there is not an extreme awareness that this is a false sense of security right now, and ultimately, you know, the booms and busts are going to get more and more and more and more extreme, where it's going, like you say, just isolate more and more people, because you have to be very, very wealthy. And then you have to be right speculating and be wealthy even, and be smart about your speculation, even on top of that. And so you just alienate more and more people, and all of a sudden, you know, that's where revolutions happen, and then all bets are off. So, you know, I think our challenge as a society and as individuals in the society, you're trying to protect our families, ourselves, our families, our friends, those around us we work with, you know, that our challenge is how can we transition systems peacefully, you know, despite everyone's vested interest, you know, and be cognizant of that, but how can we transition and avoid a revolutionary type, you know, bloody scenario? So I think that crypto actually provides some nice groundwork for it in a lot of ways, because it does conveniently have an end around a lot of the centralized regulations, because it is truly decentralized in the way that its mechanism works. So, you know, it's, I know it's getting down into the weeds a little bit with some of your listeners, but it's, the nuance is very, very important once you kind of start understanding some of the challenges with the financial system and some of the legacy issues in place and the impediments in place that can help provide redundancy and other systems around it. So, but, you know, I'm very grateful for our team for having to accept this challenge, and it's not easy, but, you know, they've embraced the challenge, and I think it's going to be very lucrative, of course. Yeah, it's rewarding every day. And, you know, thank you also to all of our clients and stakeholders, all of you out there that, you know, make it a pleasure and an honor to work with you. So, you know, really appreciate all of our stakeholders.
So, I mean, so now how does, you know, I want to get back to one thing I asked you earlier. So, like, for example, the companies that take either the Hayek or whatever they take, and that's, you know, not cleared by anybody. I mean, and they convert it, so they pay tax on their end, but the other side doesn't necessarily have to be responsible for that kind of money. Is that accurate?
I mean, I would say, you know, I'm not a tax expert, so yeah,
neither am I.
Tax professional, but I mean, you know, you have to. You know, gold is not looked at as money, neither is IP. So in this case, a Hayek is a form of intellectual property. It's a cryptographic receipt, technically. So, I mean, Bitcoin is in cryptocurrency has been defined as intellectual property so far by IRS portion of Treasury. So, you know, that's how, however you would accept property. So in the United States, for example, we are the barter likely transaction in that case would be probably what your tax professional would say. Maybe not. I don't know. Ask the CPA in your that your business consults with, or whatever tax expert you have file your business taxes would be the best person to ask.
That's a good answer. I like that, because that's the same answer I'd give, because I wouldn't know the answer either. So you got about a minute here. Give me something really that you want to get off your mind here.
What's on my mind is the divergence that I'm seeing in the markets right now. I mean, as you know, you being a trader, I think it's something you appreciate. I don't know if it's something that I'm guessing you probably picked up on too, but gold has been moving a little differently, it seems like, the last, you know, week and a half or so, ever since we had the you know, relatively speaking, bigger fall because of China. And so it's off of oil. Oil's been down, gold's been up, copper's been down, you know, gold's been up nominally, or at least hanging in. So even, you know, with some of the dollar strength, and gold has fared less poorly than some of the other industrial, pretty much almost all the other industrial metals, at least the major ones, so, and major energy complex. So that's interesting to me, and the reason why is because I've observed that before. Throughout the years, that typically usually tells me we're pretty close to some sort of inflection point of some sort. So, you know, we'll see what that is. I think we're going to see rates extended a lot further because of China. I think that's, you know, and just because of another fear of price deflation, which is something that really, really scares the central banks out there, because that can cause massive credit contagion. Things can start imploding if the price deflation gets too dangerous, because we live in an Alice in Wonderland world, Bubba. So up is down is up, and that's what central bank policies do. They unfortunately cause perversion, and they don't cause rational human responses. So, but you know, the best we can do is just try to evolve, and yeah, you know, that's the beautiful thing about cryptocurrency. You know, we have alternatives out there, and let's embrace them. It's going to make our lives better, going to make our families better for them. So. And our lives better for them.
You are correct. Up is down and down is up. And I know that. And the last thing, you're not going to be able to comment on this, but I'm going to give you my theory. I think that China is actually selling their gold in the front door, and they're buying it in the back door, and they're accumulating as they everybody else, all these central banks manipulate anything. But that's the end of the show. This is Anthem Blanchard from AnthemVault.com. Thanks, Anthem. I appreciate you being on. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horch. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horch. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.